InvestTalk is brought to you today by Health IQ. People who work out and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. That's the whole idea behind Health IQ. If you're a Health IQ customer, you could save up to 33% on your life insurance premium. How do you find out more about it? To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/invest or mention the promo code INVEST when you talk to a Health IQ agent. This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our April 11th, 2018 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you make the best possible money decisions that you can. That's to preserve your capital, save more capital, and build that capital over time with an aim towards financial freedom, financial independence, being able to do what you want with your remaining days of your life. And we all want to get to that point where we can go to do whatever we want. And we're going to try to make the most of this hour and help you incrementally work towards that end. And that's important to understand, is incremental. And so many people want to find the next get-rich-quick investment. And typically, those are few and far between. And you're only one in, you know, many, many millions actually find that way to put, you know, small amount of money in and get huge, gigantic returns, okay? So it's something that you shouldn't expect. And if you're looking for that holy grail, you're probably going to be disappointed. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be successful. It just means that, once again, this is an incremental process and you need to build your investor toolbox. And many of the most useful tools in the investor toolbox lay there untouched. And I'm talking about tools that allow you to see the economic trajectory. What are the leading indicators that will show you where the economy is going? So I'm going to talk about some of those leading economic indicators and why they're important coming up. But before we go any further, let's move on to the phones and answer one of the questions that came in before today's Invest Talk. As always, our listener line number is 888-99-CHART, and that's how to post your question anytime.
Hi, guys. It's John from Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm looking to get into mutual fund for emerging markets. And I got a question about comparing the mutual funds. I heard Steve talk the other day about liking the 3-star funds, and I kind of understand the logic behind that. So two questions. Number one, if they only have a 3-year history of performance, is that enough? And to what extent should we be weighing in the 10-year performance? And also, some of them have a lot of turnover, up to 200% turnover, and some, you know, are very low, in the low teens. And my own logic is that one with a higher turnover means being more active and they're getting in and out of opportunities as they see fit instead of just holding on to it. And that's why we're paying a higher expense ratio for those mutual funds, the fact that they're actively managing that. I'm thinking of the mutual funds over top of the ETFs, because the mutual funds in theory are being actively managed and looking for opportunities instead of holding just a basket, relatively stagnant equities. Let me know your thoughts. Thanks.
All right, a lot of great questions. He's looking at emerging market mutual funds, and I actually think the emerging market space is probably the best value out there in the investment world when it comes to, you know, equities. And he's looking at various factors. One is a 10-year performance, and that's certainly something you should look at. But as always, with every type of asset class and every mutual fund you're looking at, you must compare them with others within that particular asset class, right? And I like 10, the longer the period, the better. Because usually, even though the last 10 years, you kind of, you know, we're just getting past that 10 years since the financial crisis mark. But in general, 10-year time frame, you have ups and downs in various asset classes, and so you can see how the mutual fund performs in all environments, right? Because there's some that have high risk and do very, very well in up markets, and because of that high risk nature, they do poor in down markets, and that kind of reverses the positive trend, right? So you want to make sure that it's a fund and has managers that can perform in all types of markets. So that's number one. Number two, turnover. And he's right that turnover, the higher the percentage of turnover, say 200%, it means that the total assets in the mutual fund are traded 200% throughout the year. So if there's $1 billion in assets in that mutual fund, they trade about $2 billion in buy and sell decisions each and every year. And that's true. That does create that is a hallmark of an actively managed fund. And if you actually understand active management versus passive, foreign investing, especially emerging market investing, active management tends to outperform it much better than indexing when it comes to foreign markets. Now, you start getting a domestic large cap, you can have an argument about that, but typically, active management does much better in the foreign markets. Same with bond market investing. Bond markets, typically active management does better than indexing. So I like that. And what also a high turnover rate for any type of fund will trigger is our capital gains distributions. And on mutual funds, you have to consider that if you're investing in a non-tax qualified account, meaning just your standard brokerage account, trust account, joint account that is taxable, that can be an issue as well that you have to look at. If you're within a 401k, within an IRA, a tax-deferred account, you don't really need to worry about that too much, but it is something to consider if it's a taxable account. So I hope that helped a little bit, to give you a little more insight into emerging market funds, how to analyze a fund in general long term, and most of those things I just spoke to speak to pretty much every fund and how to look at them in relation to whether you should buy or not, whether they're good for your portfolio. And I see this, one of the things lastly is a lot of people chase performance, right? They look at a list, they look at their fund options in their 401k, and they just look at the last 3 years, and they say, well, this fund did the best, so I'm going to invest in the top five performing funds over the last 3-5 years. And in fact, that's a horrible way to look at it, but it's simple, and that's a lot of people can understand that, and they're okay with, comfortable with that type of decision making, even though it's not the way to go about it. So you always have to look at performance in relation to their peers. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, as we always say, we don't have a crystal ball, but there are tools to help us peer into the more likely future. And there are a few indices that you can follow, such as the ECRI, the Economic Cycle Research Institute, the Conference Board, and the Philly Fed. Here are some of the components of the Philly Fed Index. These are all leading indexes. State-level housing permits. Housing is obviously a very, very important part of our economy, and the more homes are built, the more jobs are created, not just from building homes, but also people buying homes. They're going to go out there and probably furnish that home, so that will help with retail sales as well as production of some of that the furniture was produced here in America. So all those activities, the commissions for the realtor, and there's a lot of money that goes, the loan, right? The commission on the loan for the loan officer. All those things add to economic activity and are positive, add to income for the people involved in the industry. So you want to see housing, state-level housing permits on the rise. Then there's also state initial unemployment insurance claims. Obviously, when people get laid off, they are far less likely to spend money in the future, thus dragging down economic activity. That's pretty obvious. Then there's delivery times for the ISM manufacturing survey. This indicates how robust the industrial sector is performing. And then there's the interest rate spreads between the 10-year and the 3-month T-bill. Now, the shape of the curve is important because the steeper that is, the more profitable it is for banks to lend money. Now, banks make money by borrowing short, typically from depositors, right? You're paying, they're paying a small, low interest rate on, from depositors, but there's other sources of that capital as well. And they're lending long at a higher rate. So if they can lend at a higher rate than their cost to borrow, they tend to lend money, and that creates economic activity. Now, there are others as well, but you should be looking at these variables and consider them in your understanding of where the economy is going, what drives the economy in the future, and where you should be exposed in the market. Now, do you have a question about economic indicators, about a stock, about a sector, maybe an asset class in general? Our direct line, as always, is 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your questions about real estate, about any money questions really at all that you have in mind. I want to hear from you. Take part in the conversation. Ask your question. Share your comment. 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to InvestTalk, answers to important questions. What's your money topic today?
Canadian Investment Trust.
Time Managed Fund.
I want to know, when do you know when to sell your mutual fund?
Get your question to us now. We're ready. 888-99-CHART. That's how to reach InvestTalk anytime.
Appreciate the show. Very educational.
Chart 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, we're going to spend a few minutes today talking about when you should and when you shouldn't invest your tax refund. It is tax season. We're just about, a week away, I think our taxes are due. So if you haven't started preparing those, you probably want to get on it, and if you have a CPA that you work with, which you probably should, if you have a complex situation, they're probably not going to be very happy that you're waiting so long, but I would get on it sooner rather than later. But we're going to talk about what you should do with your tax refund if you have one. Also, did we get a Dow Theory sell signal? Did we get a Dow Theory sell signal? We're going to talk about that, and what does that mean? Also, geopolitical risk. Geopolitical risk is starting to increase lately, and the markets are reacting more to it. And I'm going to talk a little bit about why and what risks we're seeing playing out in the market. And then lastly, investing in rental properties. What are the pros and cons of investing in rental real estate? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk a little bit about the market today. We had an overall, it was kind of a mixed day in the markets. The Dow, I believe, was up. Sorry, I'm just loading this up here. If you're on our YouTube live stream, you'll be able to see my screen and what I'm looking at. So if you're at home or even on mobile, you can actually watch it. But the markets overall faded late in the day. Had a down open, rallied through the morning, and we actually faded late in the day. So just another more chop, and to me this is continues to be bearish consolidation on the major indexes. I talked about this on Monday. We can get rallies, but they're guilty until proven innocent, and we've continued to see rallies being met with selling, and the rallies not getting a whole lot of traction. The Dow is down 218 points at the close today. The S&P was down 14. NASDAQ was down 25. The Russell 2000 was actually up a little bit on the day, so that's a positive. But I like to look at the NYA, the NYSE index, pretty broad, large, mid, small. And that was down about 0.4%, down 51 points. So a decently negative day on the back of we had the Facebook testimony, which I don't think really drove the market, but you obviously have the Syrian conflict and potential war there. It drove oil prices and commodities higher, and that was certainly something that's going to weigh on the markets until that clears itself. So that was the market today. This is Invest Talk. We talk about everything from stocks to bonds to life insurance to real estate, anything money related, investment related. I want to talk about it with you. I welcome any money questions right now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk continues on a service of KPP Financial. The KPP principals practice parallel investing. That's investing in the same programs as their clients. Independent thinking, shared success. Click on the Investment Programs tab on investtalk.com. Got a question for Justin? 888-99-CHART is how to reach him right now on Invest Talk.
My name is Lawrence, calling from Hawaii, first-time caller. Been listening to your podcast for 2 weeks now. Just had a question about the company Disney, D-I-S. I currently have about $4,000 invested, been holding it for about 2 years. Looks like it's been trading sideways for the most part the last 2 years. Wondering if I should sell it. Initially had it as a long-term investment, but I'd like to potentially use that money for my first mutual fund, you know, potentially like value stocks or value mutual funds. I also understand that Disney does have a lot of good franchises, Marvel, Lucasfilm. Obviously, it's parks trying to improve its ESPN deal. Just wondering what your thoughts are. Thanks.
All right, he's looking at Disney, Walt Disney Company. I don't think I need to explain who they are to anybody else out there. But if you're looking at our YouTube live stream, you'll see the economic numbers, the business performance over the past 8 years or so. Earnings in 2011 were $2.54. This year, they're supposed to make $6.88. So they've over doubled their earnings per share over the past 7 years or so, about 150% growth, which is substantial. Part of that is, like you said, acquisition of Lucasfilms, and Disney has good track record of acquisitions, of management. Currently, their market cap is $150 billion, and they yield about 1.7%. The issue is that over the past couple of years, and the reason why you've seen kind of the stock go flat basically since mid part of 2015, so you're talking about 3 years of sideways action, even though earnings have gone from 515 to 688. Now, the biggest issue with Disney right now is that a lot of the growth in revenue and the growth in earnings over the past, say, 10 years or so has to do with their ESPN franchise and the value there, and the fact that the value of sports content, sports reporting has really gone up, and ESPN remains to be the leader in the space. But that growth has slowed as a lot of people are cutting the cable cord, and many of those people don't miss ESPN. Or they're finding their sports coverage online in other ways, and they just aren't paying the highest, they're paying a high cable bill, and actually ESPN has the highest cost to carry the ESPN channel out of all the channels on the cable lineup. So because of the demand for ESPN. So that's one of the biggest drags of why revenue really has been flat over the past, call it 2 years or so, even though earnings have gone up. The return on, last year earnings fell 2 cents, went from 572 to 570. So earnings are flattening out, even though they're expected to grow by about a little over a dollar a share this year. Return on equity is 21%. That's a positive. Once again, yields 1.7%. You know, if you're looking at this is a long-term investment, Disney's a great long-term investment. Strong, consistent return on equity of 20, 21, 25%, depending on what time frame you're looking at. Return on invested capital in the 15% range. Very modest
this
debt levels.
This is Invest Talk.
Good franchises and economic report. So, this is Sorry about that. So I really like Disney, and as long as it's a part of your overall portfolio, long term, that's good. I like it. But if you, the biggest negative I see is the chart. The chart has been flat, kind of making lower highs, and it is going to be economically cyclical because of the way that their revenue is diversified, but it's still over a lot of economically sensitive areas of the market, tourism, entertainment, advertising, etc. So if the market does go into a bear market, the economy does go into a recession, do not think that Disney won't go down. But if you have a long-term time horizon, I still like Disney, but you got to be willing to hold it for 10-plus years. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, it is tax season. You may be expecting a tax refund. The big question is, should you invest it? Or maybe shouldn't you? What should you do with, say you get a tax refund, you get $1,000. What should you do? Well, first, if you have any high interest debt, credit cards, maybe even a high interest car loan, you want to pay that off first. Why? Because you're guaranteed a return on that money, right? If you're not paying the 10, 15, 20% interest on a loan that you might have, that's basically like earning that amount guaranteed, and there's no place in the market where you're really going to get a 10-plus percent return on your money in a guaranteed fashion, okay? So that's the first thing. Pay down any high debts, high-yielding debts, high-interest debts. Then build your emergency fund. Start off with $1,000 and start building that up, and you want to build that to about 6 months of your expenses, 6 months of your expenses. So if your annual monthly expenses are $5,000, you want to build up $30,000 in liquid cash. Now, then lastly, invest it. Put it in IRAs, in your 401k maybe, up your 401k contributions, etc. You can always bring down those 401k contributions if you have to, but that's what it would be the way I start doing it if you have some extra money. Now, what's coming up on the next Invest Talk? Rebalancing your portfolio is essential, and it has to be at the right time, though. We're going to talk about that on tomorrow's Invest Talk. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
If you're the kind of person who invests in their good health, doesn't it make sense that you should pay less for life insurance? The stats show it clearly. People who eat smart and exercise are 42% less likely to be obese, and they have a 50% lower hospitalization rate. So what's the return on investment for following a healthy lifestyle? Health IQ can save their customers up to a third on life insurance. That's it, up to 33%. That's a healthy return for any investment. InvestTalk is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/invest to see if you qualify. That's healthiq.com/invest. Or mention the promo code INVEST so they'll know you're an InvestTalk listener when you talk with a Health IQ agent. Now let's get back to the podcast. This is InvestTalk. We try to keep the media hype at bay, focus on the facts, and base our advice on time-tested investing principles to help you make the best possible decisions about savings, spending, and investing. The anytime number for your questions right now, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve or Justin, Mike calling from Tampa, Florida. Just wondering if we could take a look at Broadcom, AVGO. Seems to have fallen nicely with the recent pullback. It's trading at support right now at $228. I also know that in your newsletter on 12/15, you said look for a pullback possibly below $200. Today we're at $228. I'm not sure if we can continue to fall. I'm just wondering if we could re-examine an entry point for this stock, and if you think I should just wait and see if it falls below 200, like we said previously, or you think now would be a time to buy, especially if it holds at this level right here at $228. All righty. If you guys can just tell me what would be a good entry point, if so, and if this is a solid company. I know that its dividend was increased recently. All righty, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, he's looking at Broadcom Incorporated. AVGO is the symbol, about $100 billion market cap. I believe we do, or maybe we did at some point, own the bonds of Broadcom for our balanced income account. But nonetheless, this is a designer of analog integrated circuits for telecom, industrial, automotive, and computing markets. One of the largest chip makers in the world. Yields about 2.9%, and that what was raised recently, like the caller said, they have a very modest amount of debt, about a call it $14 billion, which is pretty mild in relation to its market cap and its revenue of about $18 billion in the trailing 12 months. Revenues are up about 29%, and that's actually an acceleration from the previous quarter year over year of only 17%. So they're doing some good things. Revenue or earnings are up 41% year over year from last quarter. For the full year, earnings are expected to be up 24% this year, only 5% next year. I like Broadcom. It's a good company. Return on equity is, let's see, where is that? It's about 37%. That's very high. Return on invested capital, right around the 20% mark, also very, very high as well. Let me look long term and see how sustainable that is. One issue with Broadcom, any really chip company, is they tend to be very cyclical. They have a lot of operating leverage. And when I say operating leverage, it means when sales go up, a lot of those sales drop to the bottom line because most of their costs are about building out factories, building the chips, the infrastructure to build the chips that they are producing. And in good times, things are good. But suddenly that fixed cost of all those factories becomes a burden, a large burden to the bottom line when maybe the chip sector goes south. And it is a sector, like I said, that typically has big booms and bust cycles. So be prepared for a lot of volatility in this name. But it is a name that I think should be on everyone's watch list for a potential purchase at some point. And I do agree that the chip sector in general is starting to roll over. Technically, it's starting to look weaker. And I think that will eventually feed into Broadcom. And so I do think you'll get your entry point below $200 a share. Today it closed at $240. Call was probably a day or two old. But it closed at $240 today. Its 52-week high is $285. 52-week low is $208. And I think you will get a better chance to be in Broadcom in the coming year or so. I would be patient, pick it up below $200 a share. That was AVGO. Broadcom is the name. Let's talk a little bit about Dow Theory. Do you know what Dow Theory is? Well, this is one of the most widely followed and probably one of the most successful market timing tools out there. Now, we know it's difficult to time the market, but it's probably one of the best out there. And we got a signal yesterday that tells us it's time to be cautious on the overall markets, and Dow Theory confirmed it. Now, what is Dow Theory? First off, the theory tracks two primary indicators. That is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, as well as the Dow Jones Transportation Index. Two different indexes sound similar, but they are not. Now, investors following Charles Dow, this is the inventor of the Dow, his thinking was that when these two indicators made, I'll give you kind of how it works. So, when we had the peak in January and started to sell off into February, the market hit support around the 200-day moving average and rallied. And did not make a new high. And the theory states that if the next sell-off takes those two indexes below the previous closing lows, and this would be in February, investors should sell and wait for a better opportunity to buy back into the market. Now, the floor for support on the transports was 10,136. That was the closing low in February. Yesterday, we closed at 10,119, a close below that number, which triggered a Dow Theory sell signal. Now, there are other ways to figure out how risky the market is, whether you should lighten up on your portfolio positions. Could be the 200-day moving average. Many people like that. But you also have to understand the Dow Theory doesn't work every time. Last August, there was also a Dow Theory sell signal. That day, it closed at about 9,021. The Dow Transports did. And the Dow itself closed at 21,783. Obviously, you see a large rally since then. I would say rally, about 10% or so rally from those levels. So it is not perfect, but it has a pretty good track record. And we've been saying for some time that this is a market that is guilty until proven innocent. And you can see that from today, right? You had a rally most of the day. Even Monday, you had a big rally most of the day. Sold off, closed near the lows of the day. That's never a positive sign. You don't want to see the markets close near the lows of the day. You want to see it close at the highs of the day. Same with individual stocks. That is a good indicator of strength because a lot of trading happens around the opens and the close, and the volume picks up. And if sellers are in control of the market, or sellers are in control of a particular stock near the end of the day on high volume, that is something you should be worried about. Now, April is Financial Literacy Month, and Steve and I are drawing your attention to some books that can help you in your search for financial knowledge. Yesterday, Steve talked about fundamental analysis. Now, today I want to turn to technical analysis, and we do have some books there on our website and in our book section that can point you to help you understand how to read charts. One is Technical Analysis of the Financial Markets, a Comprehensive Guide to Trading Methods and Applications. This is by John J. Murphy. This is a great reference book, and it can teach you the concepts of technical analysis and how they apply to all markets. Stock, bond, interest rate, commodity markets, futures markets. And it's very comprehensive. It's a great book if you're trying to learn technical analysis. Once again, you can see more titles like that on our book section on InvestTalk.com. Click on the InvestTalk tab.
Do you have questions about college savings plans? The new tax bill stops the Coverdell program, but both Series 1 savings bonds and Section 529 college savings plans offer tax-advantaged ways to save for college. What are the merits of a prepaid tuition plan? These are offered by many different states. There are disadvantages, too, but it may be something to look into. Ask your question about it, if you'd like, at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve or Justin. This is Chris from Mississippi. I got a question for you. I am buying a investment property, a single-family dwelling that I'm going to lease, rent to own to my son. I'm getting a 15-year loan. I'm 59 years old. If all else fails, I'd have no problem making the payment on it myself. Would I be better off doubling up the payments on this property as my son pays me for it, and pay off the loan quicker, and then just collect the balance of the loan and take up the loan at the end, after the loan is actually paid off to the bank? I'm getting a 4.5% interest rate on it. Or would I be better taking that doubled up payment and investing it in the market? I was just thinking it might be better to have it paid off before, you know, in 7 years instead of 15 years when I go into retirement. Anyway, I'd like to get your opinion and see what you think. Thank you very much.
That's a great question, and he is correct that we do think that everyone should have their primary home paid off by the time retirement hits, so you don't have that burden, and you always have a kind of a place to live. So that's a good goal. But this is kind of an investment property. It's kind of a tricky one because it's going to a son. I've seen that being an issue with lending money to children and family members and friends, that can be a worry. One thing I would say is, is that potentially a worry that he may think that, oh, it's paid off, that you don't, he doesn't really need to pay you. You know, they get into economic hardships. Do they really, are you going to forgive that loan? You know, so those are things that you have to consider. Now, when it comes to just avoiding interest and paying down mortgages, and it goes to everybody, the way you have to think about it, once again, like I talked about earlier, is if you're paying down that mortgage, you're not paying that 4.5%. So you're basically guaranteeing that 4.5% return through the until the for the life of the loan, basically, until it's paid off, because you're not paying that amount of interest. And that can be a great thing to avoid that rate. Now, you certainly could earn more money in the markets by investing in bonds and stocks, and you'll probably earn 6, 7, 8% from those particular investments, but there's certainly risk there as well, so that's something to consider. So it sounds like you're fairly well off. You are comfortable in your retirement. You're comfortable with the amount of money you have and your spending habits and the income you have. So when you're in that situation, this is what we typically would advise clients, is you want to be less aggressive. You want to be more conservative, because everyone wants to make money. Everyone wants to make as much money as they can, but that comes with risks the more you push to make, right? So if you are comfortable, you have enough money, you want to be still making money, but you want to be conservative. So I would say the conservative thing would be to pay down that mortgage faster, not pay as much interest, and allow yourself to be freed up from that payment of that mortgage. Now, there is some complexity, like I said, with your son, and if I probably wouldn't tell him that you paid off the mortgage, make him think that this money is money you're paying him, or the money he's paying you is going towards a mortgage, because I know that can be complex. I don't know what your relationship is with your son, but that's something that you have to consider as well. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to give us a call, you want to do it sooner rather than later. Now, based on that last call, I want to get to one of my other talking points today, and that is about investing in rental property and what you should be considering. Now, rental income from real estate is something that a lot of people discuss when it comes to producing investment income, especially for retirement. And there's the idea of creating that steady stream of income from something you can see that's tangible is attractive to a lot of people, especially because, you know, markets, the economic markets, the equity markets, excuse me, tend to be a lot more volatile than the housing market. Not only that, but your payments on a mortgage typically are fixed, and if you're smart, especially in this environment, and incomes from rent tend to rise over time as people make more and more money. Now, that being said, there are pitfalls, and there are important pluses and minuses that you need to understand when you are investing in rental property. First is, it's not just the cost to own a property isn't just the mortgage or even just the property tax on top of that, and maybe property management fee if you have a property manager, but also maintenance. Typically, you want to expect about a cost of 1% of the value of the property to maintain the home. Now, as property prices are elevated, that might be a little high in this environment, but typically 1% is a good rule of thumb. And that's why we say is, if you're going to invest in rental real estate, you want to be getting about 1% of the value of the home on a monthly basis from rent, which is granted difficult in today's market, but that's something that we target for clients. Now, that 1% rule can, when it comes to the maintenance cost, that's something that you should be putting away on a regular basis. So you should be thinking of that. Okay, let's say it's a $300,000 home. You should be putting about $250, $300 a month into an account for maintenance costs. And sometimes that the cost for the year is $1,000. But many times you're going to make up for it in subsequent years when maybe an air conditioner goes out and you got to spend $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, things like that. So it's never static and never fixed, but it's something that you need to consider. And then you need to have realistic expectations of rental rates, vacancies. Always expect for about 1 month of rental vacancy each year. And also the tax implications of depreciation and eventually selling that property down the line. Be wary, be cognizant of that. And then just being a landlord, that can be difficult as well. 888-99-CHART, give me a call. This is Invest Talk.
Let's get back to your calls on Invest Talk for this Wednesday, April 11th. It is best executed in the calming atmosphere of a bull market before another black swan event. Rebalancing your portfolio is essential at the right time. That's next time. You have a question for Justin right now? 888-99-CHART is how to reach him on Invest Talk.
Hi, this is Bernard from Martinez. I was giving a call about a Hershey's company. I'm looking to invest a stock for my son, and just kind of curious what you guys feel about the Hershey company. I know there's some bad news on it today. Once again, it's Hershey's, H-S-Y. Thanks.
All right, he's looking at Hershey, H-S-Y. Don't think I need to explain who Hershey is, the largest chocolate and confection producers in the world, $20 billion market cap. We had owned this back, I believe, 2016, 15, for clients, sold it around the 110 level, I believe. Now we're at 96, and the reason we sold it back then is because we thought it was a little rich in valuation, and I think it still remains that, even at 96, down from that 110 level just a couple years ago. Yields about 2.7%, but you see revenue is down 2% year over year, and that's after a couple years of pretty much flat growth. Earnings are down 12% year over year. Earnings supposed to be up 13% for the full fiscal year of 2018 and up 6% next year, but those estimates are coming down. It's return on invested capital is 20%, very good, very profitable. So I like the company. I like companies that have double digit 20%+ return on invested capital figures, meaning that they're doing good things with their money, meaning they probably have a good economic moat, a lot of competitive advantages. In this case, Hershey, they have great brands, and good margins. And they don't have a lot of debt, only $2 billion debt on a $20 billion market cap and $7.5 billion in sales in the trailing 12 months. So it's a very healthy company with good cash flows, free cash flow. Last quarter was $500 million. Very profitable, very good cash flows. Operating earnings yield about 6%, which is nice. But, you know, a slow growth company, that's not quite high enough for me. And I would like that to be in the 7% range plus. So I'm kind of getting picky here, but I like it, but technically it's bearish, and I think it's going to head down into the low 80s. Now we're in the mid-90s. In the low 80s, I really like Hershey. Valuation-wise would be in line with something that we would like, what we buy for clients, and it would yield at those levels a little bit over 3%. So something in this environment of slow growth, I want at least 3%, and you're not getting that yet. But if you can get into that low 80 range, I would like Hershey, and that's H-S-Y is the symbol. So let's talk a little bit about geopolitical risk. Now, last year, you had North Korea. You had some issues that really didn't cause a market problem. But this year, you're starting to see that. You're seeing China in U.S. trade negotiations. The spat there. You have rising tensions over Syria. And this is pushing commodity prices higher. And commodity prices are now outperforming the stock market so far this year, and in a pretty dramatic fashion, especially the oil markets. And this is happening for a couple reasons. One is the dollar remains relatively weak. Even though it's bounced from its low in since the market started selling off, or the stock market started selling off in end of January, early February, the dollar's gotten a little bit stronger. It's been a pretty weak bounce, and I think that's pretty telling. And commodity prices remain relatively strong in relation to the overall equity markets. And once again, I think the main reason for this is we're getting back into a normal market. You know, central banks are pulling back, and that liquidity gave a buffer for really anything that had happened in the market over the past 7, 8, 9 years. And that is why last year was so, not necessarily boring, but from a volatility standpoint, it was. And now you're starting to get into a market where, guess what? Geopolitical problems do create sell-offs. They do create rallies when they are resolved. And that's what you're likely going to see going forward. So, do I think that commodity prices will outperform for the balance of the year? Yes, I do. I do think they will. They will outperform for the balance of the year. But you're going to have volatility. Expect that. And this is a normal market. Start understanding this is how markets react. This is how markets move. Time to end the hour. Reminder, Steve has a new date for portfolio reviews. And he will be in San Jose Wednesday, May 2nd, a few weeks from now. Reserve your hour with Steve on InvestTalk.com. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Steve Peasley and I thank you for making us a part of your day. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is President and Justin Klein Chief Executive Officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.